All right, good. So we've got quite a bit of business actually today, and also I want to try to leave some room for whatever facilitation issues are coming up. So I thought we could just kind of go down the list. Perhaps we could start with the different transcription issues. Let's see. Mickey, do you want to lead us through that, or shall I?
I don't have the paper right in front of me, although I think I know most of them. I think mainly the issue is that I think kind of it's getting time that Melinda would like to have these done so that she can take the next steps with these. So we have a few that are outstanding, and we wanted to just figure out how to get them all done in the most timely manner.
Okay. So I have a little list here that you gave to me. Let me see. One of the Karens is doing one, but is saying that it's going to take her quite a while because of other commitments. And I think we're looking for perhaps another volunteer to finish it up. Is that right, Mickey?
I think so. Mm-hmm. Someone who has time to knock it out a little bit faster.
Okay. I know it's a gruesome, hideous task. But is there anybody out there who'd be willing to take on a little more transcribing?
Catherine will.
Catherine, bless your heart. Great, thank you. Mm-hmm. I think we've got the one covered. There are a couple missing parts on one of the ones that we're looking at this week. I think we've got that covered, though.
Okay.
Is Cameron on the call?
I think so.
Cameron, are you out there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. I think it looks like we don't have a progress report from you on yours.
Well, I'm not finished.
Okay.
I can say that much. I'm more than halfway finished.
Okay. All right.
And I'm away from my computer now, so I haven't been working on it this week, but
So we'll just keep plugging away on that one, perhaps.
Yeah.
Let's see.
What are you looking towards having it?
Well, we had a couple deadlines that are passed, and so we're just trying to, just to get them. I mean, there's no urgency because there is no actual time that we have to have it. But like Mickey said, I think Melinda is eager to. Melinda's going to take this and turn this into a facilitator manual. And so she's just trying to get all the pieces together so she can do that. So I think, without putting undue pressure on ourselves, just as soon as people can manage to finish that, that would be great. And if you need help, say something, and maybe we can divide it up a little bit.
I had gotten two CDs instead of one, so somebody's already helped me by somebody else is doing the second one. So I'll commit myself to trying to push through this a little bit.
Okay. Melinda?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that if it were possible to have them all done by the first of the month, that may be just, beyond. But just as a kind of crisp deadline, it would be lovely so that the actual putting the manual together can get off the ground.
Okay. All right, good. All right, let's see. So that feels fairly complete to me on that issue. Does that feel right to Mickey and Melinda?
I think so.
Okay. All right. Hey, Mickey, do you have in front of you the thing Michael wrote about donations?
I don't have it right in front of me, but I can get it in front of me quite quickly.
Okay, maybe we'll go. I meant to have it with me, and I don't have it. But if you wouldn't mind getting that, we'll go on to another issue and then come back to that, perhaps. Let's see. Okay, so I wanted to say something. We have a facilitation retreat coming up in November. And I just wanted to tell people where we are with that and make sure that people are... Melinda, do you have the dates, or does anybody else have the dates in front of them?
I don't. I'm pretty sure...
November 1-7.
1-7, that's what I was...
Yeah, we got a thumbs up here from our registration office coordinator or person.
Okay, good. We got a lot of people watching out for this. That's great. Okay, yeah, November 1-7. And so... the word's been out, so hopefully people are aware of that, but we would really love to have as many people as possible at the monastery for that. We're right now, it's not a retreat that everyone's invited to, of course, just the people who are in the program. And so it's not up on the web or anything. And so we kind of have to, you know, be circulating and publicizing it in this way rather than the way we normally do. Right now, our registration office is working together to put together the different pieces that are required in order to actually do a formal registration. And we're not quite ready for that, but should be very early in the week, this coming week. And what we'll do is we'll send out an email to everyone on the list telling them how to register. You know, the registration process will be the way it normally is. You know, you submit a personal information form, and then there's a registration pledge and all that. But it all happened kind of behind the scenes. So we're putting those pieces together, and so that will come out to you hopefully early to midweek next week, and people can begin registering. Any questions about that? Okay. Mickey, are you there with donations?
Yes.
Okay, what I thought, I think we sent this out to everybody, right?
Yes, we did.
Okay. I thought it might be helpful, regardless, to maybe if you wouldn't mind just reading it to us, and then
sure.
We could spend a few minutes, people could make comments and suggestions. Mickey, maybe if you wouldn't mind taking notes, and then we can kind of bang out a final version to send to people over the course of the week, if that feels like that works to you.
Okay. So it's titled, For Your Consideration, Supporting Awareness Practice. The awareness practice that is offered to you by your facilitator is the result of contributions by many people. Your facilitator generously donates his or her time to make this available to you. Your facilitator participates in a regular weekly training program that is offered by the monks at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California. The monks are also generously donating their time, energy, and experience to support your facilitator and your sit group. This work is not possible without your support. We are grateful for any financial contribution you are able to make to the Zen Monastery Peace Center to support awareness practice. The monastery is a nonprofit organization supported by donations and the sale of our books. There are no rules or shoulds about donations, but people will often ask how much is enough, prompting us to offer the following as a guideline. There is a right amount for you to give, the rights in quotes. Follow your intuition. If you give too much, it won't feel right. If you give too little, it won't feel right. Either way, you will have second thoughts. Somewhere between those two points is the middle way, and it often changes. One time $100 feels like too much, another time $1,000 doesn't feel like enough. Whatever the amount, donations are never to be thought of as payment for services. Donations are an expression of our appreciation for the gift of awareness practice. Contributions can be made in several ways. By a check payable to Zen Center and given to your facilitator, by a contribution made on the Living Compassion website for the Zen Monastery Peace Center, and it has the link, and it ends in loving kindness.
Okay, great. Thanks, Mickey. Who has comments about this? Who has comments about that?
This is Janet.
It
doesn't say anything about cash, then.
That's true. Good point. It does need to say something about cash.
I think it's excellent, but I was just thinking, what if someone wanted to bring cash? And I know we brought that up one time of what we would do about that. That I think the cash would be given to the facilitator, and she would write a check, or he would write a check.
Yeah, so. I think that's what we decided. Good point. Yeah, that definitely needs to be included.
I think there was also something about there was no way to give the person a formal thank you if they'd given cash. So that probably would need to be included in the blurb.
Oh. Okay.
Or for tax purposes.
Yeah, I don't know. That might be too much for the blurb. Well, maybe as we rewrite it, we can kind of cross that bridge and see if we can. There's a way we can slide that information in there. That's a good point, though.
This is Chris. People generally understand that that's true. If they don't, if they're given cash, that receipts are tough to get. So.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one thing occurred to me, I don't know how it works in the different sitting groups, if there's actually a little, well, actually, this would be the sign by the donation basket. I was thinking if there's another little sign that says, please make checks out to the Zen Center. If you would like a tax receipt for your cash donation, please attach your name, something like that.
Dave, this is Catherine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so this is not something we're reading to the group. This is something that we're posting. Is that what the idea was?
Well, I think we should ask the group about that. The way I was thinking about it is, you know, we could print out a copy and put it in one of those little plastic things that cause, you know what I'm saying, that makes it stand up and kind of put it beside the donation basket. That way people could read it as they put it in there. And then, you know, in our group, we would just, you know, I think we decided we're going to make an announcement each week about donations. It's a real quick thing. But then that would give them something to read by the donation basket.
Okay. I have, this is, I'm sure my conditioning, I'll be happy to look at it. I am uncomfortable saying your facilitator generously donates her time to make this practice available to you. What struck me about that is tooting my own horn. And secondly, I'm really not doing it for them. So, I mean, I was just a little uncomfortable. I mean, I'm doing this for me, and I love it. If they get something out of it, that's absolutely amazingly wonderful. And
well, and Catherine, can you see how that's true? But also, it's also true that you're generously donating your time to do this.
If generously, the word generously wasn't in there, it sounds to me like I'm tooting my own horn. You know, even if we said facilitators are, it's like a group. When I say your facilitator, that means me, and it just feels funny. I'm just,
okay.
I'll look at that.
What? Does anybody else have a comment on that?
This is Melinda. One thing that just dropped in for me is the practice of tooting your own horn can be a really wonderful spiritual opportunity.
Yeah, that's really true. Yeah, it really is. Well, it's true. I mean,
that's going to say that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's true. Penny?
I was also thinking that I kind of can feel the same discomfort myself, but then if I think, for example, of people facilitating me, I have no trouble seeing them as being generous. So, it's a good spiritual opportunity then to own that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, what I was seeing about it, a couple things. One is, it's true that people are generously donating their time. I mean, that's a fact, as far as I can tell. It's very generous to be doing what we're doing here. I can also recognize that it's hard to admit that. But, you know, something that takes care of that for me is the letter is not written as coming from the facilitator. It's written as coming from the organization. So it's like, you know, I didn't want them to say this, but they did, you know. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like it's being said about the person rather than they're saying it about themselves.
Okay, so if after in loving kindness, could it say Zen Monastery Peace Center?
Yeah, I was thinking it would say something like that, yeah.
Instead of in loving kindness, Catherine, you know.
Turn your generous facilitator.
No. It's amazing watching my conditioning come up, so this is a good thing.
Yeah, well, it is a good thing. And it's good to have these things brought up, too, because I think it's just really good for all of us.
Well, this is Chris. That same sentence, I had a reaction to just the last two words, I think, the to you part, and was wondering if that got dropped, if that would be more accurate in people's experience.
Could you read that sentence? I'm not sure what you're referring to exactly. Or could somebody?
Well, go ahead and read it.
Do you want me to read it again?
Just that one part that Chris is referring to.
It's the second sentence.
Your facilitator generously donates his or her time to make this practice available to you.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I see what you're saying, Chris. Do other people agree that should come out?
Yeah. Yes.
Because it's really not specific to that person. That feels real personal. If I were on the receiving end of it, it feels really personal. And it's just not my experience that that's the case. So.
Yeah, I agree completely. Good catch.
I had one other suggestion if we're moving on.
Well, we're still on the donation thing.
Yeah, no, just on the donation thing. I think it's the last sentence or next to the last where it says this is not in any way to be thought of as payment for services.
Uh-huh.
And what I would do if I heard it all right, correctly, was this is not payment for services, but is, and have the sentence that comes after that say what it is, which is what I think it does.
Okay, I'm not clear what you're saying, Melinda.
Well, it's probably going to take Mickey reading it again with not saying...
So you're suggesting kind of combining those two sentences, I think, but I'll read them the way they are right now. Whatever the amount, donations are never to be thought of as payment for services. Donations are an expression of our appreciation for the gift of awareness practice.
Yeah, so it's just, I would take out never to be thought of as. It's simply they're not.
Ah.
And then comma, but they are, and then the rest of that. There'd be another word or two tweak to make that work. But I think it would, somebody, I think, in an email questioned if they aren't payment for services, what are they? And it feels like that would answer that particular question.
Okay, did you get that, Mickey?
Yeah, what I got was taking out the never to be thought of as, so it would just read whatever the amount. Donations are not payment for services. They are. They are an expression of our appreciation for the gift of awareness practice.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Mickey, when we work on that this week, maybe we can take a look at that distinction. I can't sit without it in front of me. I can't really get it. But we can look at it whether we're actually coming up with a thing.
Yep.
Dave, this is Marie.
Marie.
Yeah. First thing I wanted to just say that, you know, it's nice as a facilitator, you know, for me to be reminded that I'm offering something, because that's the hardest thing for me to do. I mean, you know, my condition is more about, am I really worthy to be in this honorable place of getting to do this?
Oh, I see. Instead of you're generously offering something.
I forget something. That... I think because that's where I find the willingness to do it is, I do know that I've had years of practice experience, and I'm
mm-hmm.
sure there are people out there that don't have as much or, you know, that could benefit in some way. But it's often hard for me to own that I really have something to offer. So
yeah.
It's nice that it's in there so I can be reminded.
Yeah, I totally agree, because what you're talking about is going beyond self-hatred, basically.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that this came up for me when I heard it read, when the suggested donation talked about the two numbers were $100 and $1,000.
Yeah, and that came up. That startled me too.
You know, I tend to think people donate on a sitting group more on a per week basis. Drop
$10. Yeah.
That's what I do. Like when I went to Chris's group, I would put a donation in every week that I was there. So I wonder if those numbers are too high.
I think they are. Well, I think that's the money in the middle way thing. I think that just got pulled from some literature that we have. And, that language is for the end of a retreat, you know, after somebody's been to the monastery for a week and has had this really opening experience. So I do think we need to alter that in some way to make it fit with what, you know, people just kind of come in once a week for an hour. What would people suggest to accommodate that? Or Marie, do you have a suggestion?
Well, I hadn't really thought about it.
We could start with
five as the low is what comes up for me.
Yeah, I suppose it ought to be possible to take out any actual numbers at all. Anybody else have input on that one?
This is Michael.
Chris, I'd probably go $1 on the low side and $100 on the high side. Give them a wide range to choose from.
That might work.
You know, the other thing that happens at Mountain Zen is people don't necessarily put in every week, and it's like I find, you know, $20 bills in the donations basket, some, you know, two or three sometimes, and others, you know, maybe, you know, $1 or $2. So it just varies all over the place.
Right. And I don't think there's anything in the blurb that implies that they should give every week, right? This is just what they look at when they're looking at walk-by basket.
Yeah,
okay. Michael, did you have a comment?
I liked $1 or $100, and I had another topic on this.
Okay, thanks, Michael. I'll come back to you on the other topic. Any other comments on the money amount, or do we feel like we're kind of more or less in agreement there?
Hey, this is Ann. Reaction
Ann.
To have
I have a reaction to it being a dollar. I don't know why. I guess I would want it to be $5. I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing too, Ann. That might lowball a little bit because we do want people to take to really, you know, to look at that. You know, I don't know. Do other people think it's important for it to be a dollar, or should we make it more like a little bit up a little bit?
A little bit higher.
Yeah, I'd go a little bit higher.
$5 feels good to me.
Because people tend to think whatever it is we put out there.
Right.
That's what I was thinking. This is Cameron. I was wondering if we need to actually put amounts because it's kind of like leading the witness. Maybe people would think something we didn't even think if we don't actually put some sort of, you know, low and high, because maybe somebody would put something higher or something.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Ian and Dave. I kind of liked your idea of not putting amounts in.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
It's funny, you know, this is Marie, and it has surprised me, you know, at times that people don't donate. And so some part of me is feeling like saying a number kind of starts to make it more tangible, more real.
Okay.
Me too. I second that.
I agree. Yeah, this is Lori, and I agree with all of that, that we should put something down, but like $5 or even 10 to begin with. Yeah.
Yeah, I took the zeros off myself. I took, you know, 10 to 100.
10 to 100? Okay.
One thing that, Dave, this is Penny, one thing about putting numbers is it may be that, you know, even though we're saying, you know, whatever goes, people may do kind of situation for them in which they have no kind of sense about what those numbers might be.
Mm-hmm.
And putting numbers is helpful. And I would go with $5.
So you're saying, Penny, it would kind of give them some parameters so they know kind of what we're sort of shooting for here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you would go with $5. Okay.
Dave, this is Chris B. I'd go the other way, in fact, because for me, at least when I first went to the monastery, what the impression that I got was these guys, it's really okay for me not to donate if that's, you know, fits with my personal circumstances or whatever. And so kind of, you know, I think salespeople call it anchoring or whatever, trying to anchor them in a higher bracket. Kind of goes in that way of kind of selling and setting expectations, which I think goes in the opposite way from what we're trying to do with this sentence, if you see what I mean.
Well, that's an interesting point because I think there is an expectation. I mean, if somebody doesn't have the money, then of course they can't donate. But I think a big piece of why we're doing this is just my perspective, is to raise awareness that, you know, people have to support what it is that they care about and what they benefit from. And if they're not willing to do that, then, you know, this whole thing that we're trying to create here essentially won't work. And part of it is on a practical level that it won't work, and part of it is the awareness raising piece, that, because that's a really big thing to get on a spiritual level, that, you know, generosity, you know, receiving, giving comes from receiving, and we have to allow that to happen. So I think it's important that we do communicate to people that this really is something that we expect. You know, if you're coming and benefiting from this, we would like to have whatever support you can provide. Now, I don't know if that's different from what you're saying, Chris, but
it's different. I mean, I can hear what you're saying, Dave, but somehow it's not captured in the sentence as it is today, if you see what I mean.
Oh, it's not captured in the sentence. Okay.
That idea that you've just expressed, that doesn't come across to me anyway.
Okay.
But I don't have any better ideas.
Okay.
What I heard you say was that if we support that which is valuable, it continues to keep going on, which is, I think there was another blurb that we have here at the monastery that says something like that too. I think it's in the dining hall, something about it costs a lot to offer spiritual practice.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good point, Alex, because that really rings true and familiar when you say that.
You might
you know what?
Combine them.
Yeah, well, we might be able to stick in some of that language to really help. Mickey, could you make a note of that? Because we could lift that language from wherever it is in the dining hall.
Okay.
We could we could put it in there and see if that kind of takes care of it. Because it seems like a good point Chris is raising.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I think that, you know, one of our obligations in a way is to educate people about what what is
these days a reasonable donation to support what is being offered. Because I just think back to our days when we were ministering in the church and, you know, people routinely put a dollar bill in the offering basket, which they've been doing for years in their lives without any recognition that that times had changed and that what a dollar did a long time ago, it no longer did. So
right.
There was always an obligation to educate people about what the reality was.
Yeah, I'm getting that too, Mickey, that a part of this is to solicit donations, and a lot of part of this is just to, like we were saying before, to raise awareness and to educate people just kind of about what's the deal, you know?
Yeah, this is Melinda, and I really agree. What I'm looking at is a human or cultural phenomenon that if it feels like something is free, I don't need to support it. And so to get across that it isn't, and we need support, and each person makes it happen, feels really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Okay, well, how about, go ahead, whoever that was.
Oh, it's just good that we're having this conversation because it feels a lot like the guidelines, you know, where we started saying, do not do this, do not do this, and then we just rewrote it to reflect, you know, for a facilitator to know that this is why we say not to do this, not to do that,
mm-hmm.
or do this and to do that.
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. It is good. Well, how about if we take it from here? Maybe Mickey, you and I could work on it a little bit, and then get it out to people, and we could even check in again on, maybe on the next call with the kind of the next version and see if everybody feels all right about it.
Yeah, and I can take on getting the information that's in the dining hall to Mickey.
That would be
okay.
Great, Alex.
This
right, good. That was. Yeah, Chris.
Well, just one last thing. I'd be in favor of including that blurb with the guidelines handout, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, that's
maybe
a good point.
The back side of that sheet or something.
Uh-huh. I would also. I think that's a great idea.
And this is Tony. It just occurred to me, I wonder if it would be appropriate and helpful to read the statement as part of the guidelines.
Well, let's see. Now, that's what I was getting to, too. I was imagining when Chris said that they would be a part of the orientation, because I think that's when we kind of go over all the guidelines.
Yeah.
Is that right, or are we still doing that at the beginning of the groups now? I guess it's different for the sitting groups and the key groups. What are the key groups doing now for the guidelines?
I know I went over the guidelines. I have the same two people, so I went over the guidelines at the very first meeting.
Okay.
And then that's all I've done.
Okay. Yeah, you know what that makes me realize is we probably need to transition the key groups into more of a orientation before group format. So I'll put that on the list for next week to talk about.
It's awfully long to read. This one is. You know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's How about if we cover? I want to make sure we leave time for some facilitation issues. So how about if for next time we'll put down how to communicate the donations thing, and also what to do with the key groups in terms of, you know, the guidelines, and do we want to move to more of a orientation kind of thing like the sitting groups have, like before group.
Dave, this is.
Yeah. I couldn't hear who that was, but go ahead.
It's Rita. I just had another comment. I just figured how to unmute myself.
okay.
I've heard a statement made in talking about Donna that I found very valuable, and that's by describing the teachings as priceless, and
okay.
then going into the discussion about $5 too much, $500 too little sort of thing. But sort of recognizing that we're not putting a price on it because it's priceless, and sort of valuing that. And I thought that's always been a nice intro to see how we stand in relationship to what we are offering.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea, because that says really it's worth any amount of money, and yet here's some guidelines to help you on a tangible level sort of
decide what's it. Thank you.
Okay, good. Okay, hang on just a second. I've got to make a note here. Okay, why don't we move on? Mickey, if you don't mind, you offered there was a a little bit of writing we need to do about the thing that Jan was going to do. Yeah, exactly. So if you don't mind, I think I'll just take you up on your offer to do that if you don't care, just to make it easy.
Yep.
Okay,
happy to do that.
All right, thanks, Mickey. I think it'll be pretty simple. All right, so let's move on to facilitation issues. What I liked what we did last time, where we kind of got a sense of who had issues and what, and just simply what they were, and then we'll just kind of go down the list. So who has things they want to talk about on the call?
Dave.
Catherine.
Okay. Catherine's got one. Who else?
Marie. I have one, Dave.
Okay, Marie. Others?
Yeah, David.
David, okay.
This is Chris. I've got a minor one.
Chris, okay. Others?
Chris B.
Chris B, okay, great. All right. Anyone else? Okay, I'd like to start with Chris B, because I know Chris B can't always make it on the calls. So, Chris, why don't we start with you, and then we'll go down the list. What have you got?
Okay, thanks for that. I do appreciate these calls on Saturdays so I don't have to get up in the middle of the night. So I know it's not so convenient for people in the States that Saturday morning, but it's Saturday evening here.
Yeah, that's great.
The issue I have is it's occurred a couple of times, and it particularly occurred this week, was things were going great, and the person was kind of, they started off talking about the reading and how it related to their life, and then they went off in a kind of direction away from the reading, you might say. And they got so far away from the reading that I could see myself going into this kind of, how does this relate to the reading? Is this too far? And this kind of activity within myself that was sort of going on. And then after a while, I sort of had this feeling, gee, I need to do something about this, because this person is now entirely somewhere else. And so I sort of just said to the person, how do you see that this relates to the reading? And the person said, well, it doesn't. And it kind of just stopped the facilitation kind of stopped, because we just kind of looked at each other, and I was like, they were in flow, and suddenly they had nothing to say. And it's like, there's quite a while before they could think of something related. It's hard to bring it back to the sort of the topic. And I guess what I'm looking for is to hear how other people kind of deal with that thing. Also, they're going up into my own head and thinking about, can I spin this to make it relevant to the reading, or can I somehow draw them out in a way that sort of brings them back to the reading? Or that's something I'm struggling with.
Are you ready for the piece?
Yeah, that's really one of those facilitation moments, isn't it? Hey, well, let's throw it out to the gang. We have had some conversations about this, but not actually this in particular. What do people see about this?
This is Dan.
What
occurs to me is, it seems like an ideal one if we've got into our heads as a facilitator, and we're at that dead stop, is to open it up to the group of, for what's been said, how can people, if there's just one other person in the room, does anyone else see how this might relate, or for themselves how it might relate?
Yeah, it would have to be the second, wouldn't it? It would have to be what's coming up for people, because we wouldn't want people talking about what the person was talking about and how it related.
Yes.
Then we suddenly have chaos and really we're going to start having a really bad time. But yeah, to open up to the group, say, what are other people noticing about the reading or something? That could be effective.
In this particular case, there was only one other person in the room, so that was kind of not I can see
not
how
really
that would work if we were... Yeah.
Not really an option there. Okay. Anybody else see anything?
This is Nikki. The only thing I'm seeing is that the kind of two things that I heard Chris mention as, bring it back to the person, how do you see this relating to the reading, and also the facilitator themselves trying to connect it back to the reading, to me feel like, the best options that we have for doing that.
Yeah, I agree, Mickey. And in my little world, the very best one of those is have the facilitator bring you back to the reading. Because the other one, it may or may not work, but the facilitator can definitely do that. I mean, and it is kind of an art form. You know, we look at this a lot, like we're doing a workshop particularly, where you do an exercise, and then, you know, people start talking about the exercise, and it's inevitable people are going to head off on these tracks that are their own tracks. Mm-hmm. And there's an art in facilitation to reflecting what people are saying in terms of whatever the focus of the current discussion is. And it does take a little bit of practice, but, like, for example, a completely different example, like if we're doing a projection exercise and somebody starts launching off, then we're gonna even if we're kind of making it up a little bit, we're gonna reflect what they're saying in terms of projection, because that kind of keeps it on track. It's kind of like you're reeling the person back into the exercise over and over again.
Yeah, that's what's coming up for me, Dave. It's almost like we're reflecting process, and it is high level because it requires for the facilitator to stay on topic and reflect it from that place.
Yeah, and so there's like little tricks you could use, like so you could say something like, oh, so in terms of the reading, what you're saying is, and then kind of reframe it a little bit in terms of whatever the themes of the reading are. And that communicates to the person, hey, let's stay on track. And it also kind of helps assist them a little bit in staying on track.
Right. They'll at least say, no, that doesn't relate to the reading, or this, that's not how it relates to the reading. This is how it relates to the reading.
Yeah. Things to avoid. That would go on the things to avoid list. Anybody else? And I think that's not to say that the other one is not good also. It's say, looking at the reading, how could you express this in terms of the reading that we're having tonight? I mean, that also seems like a perfectly good thing too, but it requires a little bit of extra willingness on the part of the participant. So maybe that's kind of the second attempt.
So this is Chris L. The other thing I look at in something like that is that when that happens, like when he comes back and says, well, it's not, there's a real big opening for conditioning to come in terms of some kind of judgment. And usually I find like there can be some tension in that kind of place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like everybody's kind of expecting somebody did something wrong, you know, some kind of judgment to come in. And then almost any kind of next sentence, as long as it doesn't go towards judgment, seems to get the energy moving back in some direction. So, you know, something even light, or, you know, I don't know what that would be, but almost anything, it just kind of takes it away from that dead zone that's potentially possible there, and just moves the energy just a little bit, then things seem to naturally go back to everybody looking and contributing.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing too, Chris. I mean, it takes an incredible amount of presence, but if you can crack a joke in that moment,
it's really yeah. I mean, it's gutsy because you could kind of come in and say, "Well, it didn't seem to me like you were quite on track with the reading either." You know, imagine that, or so, you know, anything to bring it back, and then sometimes to kind of say, "Well, in the the monastery wants us to kind of keep it on track. So, what do you think?" You know, and then go from there.
Yeah, especially, you know, this is the thing Sherry's the master at. I've always admired. To make a joke about oneself, I mean, that's the ultimate diffuser of tension.
Yeah.
You know, it's just to make some little comment about yourself and that just completely takes the tension away from the person, and it's kind of light and funny and kind of presents you in a little kind of a human way. I when she does that, I always really admire it.
This is Linda. One thing that occurs to me, and of course, I can't know how it might have operated in the situation, but we will often, when there's quiet moments or when there's a stuck place, is reread the reading.
Okay.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. So there we are with how does this relate to the reading? I don't know. Well, why don't we read the reading again and see if we get a sense of how it might relate, kind of thing.
That's an excellent suggestion. That kind of is a form of what Chris was saying, I think, with just some next sentence that makes the bridge between that little awkward space into, you know, getting the energy moving again. That seems like a really skillful way to do that.
Yeah, breaks that tension.
Mm-hmm.
Puts the people on the same team, you know, it's like we're all working together with this.
Yep.
I guess one of the things for me, actually, Dave, was also the kind of this whole thing going on that I'm facilitating the person. I'm trying to be as present as I can be to the person. And I've got this kind of side process going on, sort of comparing it to the reading, I guess. So I already felt by that point I kind of stopped facilitating before I even asked the question. I don't know how the people sort of manage that.
That's a great thing to see, isn't it, Chris? Because that really is the facilitator's opportunity. Is, you know, when we talk about this all the time about facilitation, you know, you're sitting there on the cushion and you're really required to be present. You've got to actually hear what the person says, or else it's really going to get ugly. And so, because of that, you've got to. You also have a really big opportunity to see what's going on for you. And so, there really is a big opportunity, isn't it, to see what you've got going on and be letting that go while you're being present to the other person.
Hmm.
Other people have tips on that?
No more than what you just said.
Well, this is Chris L. I was just looking at how that little side conversation that goes on, like if I'm facilitating and I get drawn into this little side conversation, how that's exactly the setup for that little bit of judgment that's going to come in when
something
goes wrong. That's where it's going to begin. And if I'm not in that place, what I find is that I can move pretty easily to that little joke or that little next sentence. But boy, if I've got a side conversation going on and then something like that, you know, happens, conditioning just comes in and pounces, and then that tension, you know, my experience of that tension just goes way up.
Yeah, it's kind of like you're not really prepared. You know, as long as things are kind of going like fine on the surface level, you can kind of cruise with that side conversation happening, and you're sort of half there, half not there. But then suddenly something happens that really requires you to be present, and then it's like, oh my God, I'm not here.
Thing can jump in on that, and then the judgment happens, and I'm stuck in. I know I can't say something coming from that direction, right? that doesn't happen, but I don't know what else to say. You know.
Yeah, you know what happens for me in that is duh. You know, that's about as far as I can get is, oh, God, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
All right.
Dave?
Yeah.
This is Margaret.
Margaret.
I was just going to say that was really helpful, that comment, because it reminded me of some facilitating experiences early on. And not even that early on, you know, fairly recently, where it's like either something the person says, and that's often the case, where I go to, there's something wrong, and it's often with, oh, my God, this person is in trouble, or there's something wrong with you know, like they're hurting or they're in pain or they're, you know what I mean? It's something really wrong with their life experience that they're expressing.
So this would be your version or one of your versions of that kind of side conversation that would be going on at the same time while you're trying to facilitate someone.
Yeah, it's just that's where I go. It's like I then go to panic for that person. I mean, what I sense is, you know, there's something wrong.
Yeah, and I would imagine that probably the effect is the same in that you're not kind of there for what is called for in the moment as the situation or the conversation unfolds and you're required to respond to that.
Right. It's like there's somebody raising their hand. There's like 100 people raising their hand behind the person talking. It's just that distracting.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Oh, and this is good, isn't it? Because it's so good that's what facilitation is all about, is because that's what we're trying to do in normal life all the time is bring our attention back from the places all the voices are trying to take our attention and just really be here for this person. You know, in this case, you know, for me, to be here for me, and because that's the person in my life that needs to be facilitated all the time. It's just the motivation is not so much there a lot of times when it's just us because the consequences are just as much or more, but they're not as immediate because you're not sitting in front of the room. So it's really good practice for being able to direct our attention in that way away from all that urgency and all that, you know, it's just karmic programming is what it is. So what's actually needed right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, you know, afterwards, it's like, I just wish or, you know, that awareness that everything is okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in that moment, and I often get to that, but there is that, you know, those moments where I'm not there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's totally okay too, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess that's the hardest thing to see in a way. But first,
yeah.
You know, but.
Yeah, it's totally okay, and at the same time, that's what we're practicing.
Right.
Practicing with being in that place. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Dave, this is Jan. I just wanted to mention one other thing.
Okay.
That what Melinda brought up, this sort of goes to what Margaret said, but what Melinda offered as, you know, what if we go back to the reading? That what I love about that is the kindness and generosity it offers both to ourselves and those we might be facilitating, in that if we've all gone off, let's bring, you know, how to bring us all back. It happens to all of us. And what we're modeling in doing that, even by acknowledging it, gosh, you know, maybe we all just need to read this again to see how, whatever, that this, mm-hmm. you know, this might apply. Just the kindness and generosity is what's being modeled in doing that, at least what I see in it.
Yeah, and I really see that. Yeah, that's great. I really see that too, Jan. It does seem like excellent modeling, you know, because that's really what the practice is. It's just bringing ourselves back here. Mm-hmm. You know, another version of that, and this actually could apply in a situation like that, is reflective listening. Because, you know, as we're facilitating, reflective listening is what is the thing we have to bring us back in that very same way. And, so it's there's kind of a parallel there.
Yeah.
All right, good. Well, that was excellent. Why don't we move on to the next one? Catherine, do you want to throw your issue in?
Sure. Dave, mine was about the recorded workshop. Remember we talked about it last week. If you would rather talk about facilitator issues, that's okay. Just at some point.
Yeah,
I have two people who are interested, there's not a deadline to get back to them. So.
Okay. Yeah, and I saw there's an email from you about that we haven't responded to, so we could do it that way.
Okay, that's fine.
And just so people know, if anybody doesn't know that is an option. We did a recording of that giving and receiving workshop we did a couple weeks ago, and so if people want to do that as a workshop with their group, then there's a possibility. Marie.
Dave, mine is not really pressing. It's kind of an ongoing question. I could throw it out in one sentence just so we start to think about this.
Yeah, let's do it.
But anyway, okay. You know, we have a sitting group here in Athens, and it's been fairly small. And, you know, what I've found is so far just about the only people that have come to the group and really stuck are people that know me. You know, people that hear about my practice. You know, I mean, I think they know what a lot about our practice by being around me.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, I haven't really advertised it a lot in the past. So I started, you know, really getting the word out. And so I'm doing, you know, one or two orientations every week. And, you know, people aren't sticking. And, you know, what strikes me about it is, you know, when I started this practice, my first facilitator was Sherry Huber at a two-day workshop. And then I went regularly to anything Sherry did, and that's how I got hooked on this practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when somebody comes into our little group and, you know, I share the guidelines and all, and I always feel like the orientations go really well. And then, you know, it just feels hard for people that have no context to come into some of these readings that are very beautiful in the key and very basic, but also kind of high level.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know, I was just curious of some way to really show the beauty of our practice a little more. You know, and it comes through in, you know, when some of the more experienced people share, but I don't know, I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, that's a really interesting topic. You know, it's interesting to hear you say that, because one of the biggest motivations for doing the key program was exactly this. Because we had conversations before we launched in on that about that very thing, that we need some kind of a really kind of basic structure for people to be able to plug into who are new, so they can kind of get what we're doing and kind of get dialed into that. But it sounds like for you, there's still some missing elements of that, or there might be ways that we could help people in that transition more effectively.
Yeah, I'm curious about that, yeah. And because, you know, it's interesting because even the key groups are kind of like my sitting group has been, it's people that people know. And to me, that gives our practice a lot of credibility. But when it's somebody who just saw there's a meditation group and writes in and says, I want to come, Yeah, they have no context for our, what we're doing here. You know?
Mm-hmm. And so you
anyway,
feel like, yeah, I think I get what you're saying. It's just like they're just kind of jumping into this, and you feel like it's hard for people to get what we're doing and how we're doing it.
Yeah, it's like, to me, this is how I feel. I feel like we have this just amazing practice, and but it's hard for it to be illustrated in one meeting.
Okay.
You
well,
know,
let's put it,
they say, wow, this is really a great thing. I want to get involved with this.
I see. Okay. Well, let's see what other people see about that.
This is Melinda. I have a comment.
Okay.
I wish over the years we had kept statistics of these things, of when somebody shows up and then doesn't show up again. And I think that Cherry can go on at great length on how long it was before more than one person was at Dana Street.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the original Zen Center, that maybe part of what makes this such an extraordinary group is that we came and we stayed.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who, you know, can see what we saw when we first came to practice will be the ones who stick, and the
right.
ones who don't are among probably crowds of thousands who just didn't stay around for whatever reason.
Well, I think the reason that you're articulating is that it didn't stick with them. I mean, it didn't hit them in the place, like they weren't ready for it, or that wasn't their thing or something like that in the way that it was for us.
Yeah, and or they didn't have that, you know, that connector point that all of us had when we either saw Cherry or came to practice in some other way that just got zinged enough to bring us back and bring us back and bring us back.
Yeah, it's true. That statistic thing is interesting because, of course, you know, we often make jokes about this practice is not very popular. And,
right.
you know, it's out there all over the place. And, you know, the standard joke is, you know, people aren't banging down the monastery gates to get in there. And that just seems like it's really true. And another thing, this is along the lines, I think, of what you're saying, Melinda, is that, you know, I think the experience that Maria is describing is typical for the sitting groups. I mean, a lot of the people on the call could speak to that, I think, of just lots and lots of people coming through, and just very rarely will somebody just kind of get it and hang out and continue.
Dave, this is Penny.
Penny.
I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking about, you know, even the best teacher we know, our teacher, has been doing this for 30 years, and the Sangha is not huge. So, and you know, the other thing is that we don't know what place this has in people's lives. You know, a person might come to the group and then disappear, and it seems like, well, they didn't get it, but we really don't know what they got, and we don't know what step in their own journey this particular thing has played that might play out in some other way later.
Yeah,
so,
that's a great point.
I don't know what we can do other than just offer what we offer as authentically as we can, and you know, if people have that particular receptor open at that moment, they'll catch, and if not, it may be they move on, but something maybe happened that we can't possibly know.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. We look at that a lot with if there's nothing wrong with your retreats, where people come and spend a week, have an incredibly powerful transformational experience, and then walk out and we never see them again. And it's easy to think, well, that didn't work, but what I get to is what you're saying, Penny, is we have no idea. And it could be, like you say, that's just the next step on their journey. And then, of course, a lot of times people show back up years later and we'll find out what a tremendous impact it had that we had no idea about.
Dave, this is Ann.
Ann.
I just major yeses to everything Melinda and Penny said. When Marie was talking, what came up for me was, you know, that's a modification on the saying, when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Uh-huh.
So when the student is ready, the practice appears. And I don't think somebody coming and leaving, obviously it's a fact given Sherry's experience, says anything about the quality of the practice. I mean, I think it's really good to look at how can we present it in the best way we can, giving people
mm-hmm.
the best opportunity to see the jewel in it. And
mm-hmm.
I think it's really important to, for me at least, you know, I have major control issues. And so to realize I have no idea and I have no control and people are going to get what they get out of it, it's just a major letting go for me.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, it really is. And, of course, that's a really important thing to remember as facilitators is we can't take that kind of thing personally at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, good,
this is
good
Alex.
Point.
I'm sorry.
Alex?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's just such a great example of there's nothing wrong unless living that.
Mm-hmm.
This is occurring to me. And the other point is that I've often heard this sentence, too, is that, you know, we can't make practice easy and cheap enough for people to want to do it.
Yeah. Yep, that's really true.
Dave, this is Marie. I know we're
Marie?
Just got out of time. I wanted to just say on a positive note that I really like doing the orientations. And, you know, we show Sherry's DVD because, you know, for the meditation part.
Uh-huh.
And it's like I almost can't watch it too many times.
Mm-hmm.
And doing an orientation so brings me to how, you know, just the beauty of our practice and how we're trying to set up the privileged environment, and having had years of experience, I know how powerful that is.
Mm-hmm.
And to get reminded of the nuts and bolts of it every week, because now, I mean, school started, so all the college students are checking us out. And I just really enjoy that.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. I was thinking about the other day, just in relationship to the monastery and what's going on with the different changes, that, you know, the teaching really is, you know, it's the guidelines and the silence and the structure and the privileged environment. You know, that really is the teaching that is there. So it's kind of like we get to offer the, no matter where we are, we get to offer the teachings just in presenting people with that way of approaching life, and also this an opportunity to experience themselves in a different way.
Yeah, and having experienced the guidelines over the year, it just reinforces the guidelines for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm explaining these guidelines, and at the same time, I'm realizing what kind of amazing practice environment they have created for me over the years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it's really a good thing.
I want to add one more thing. We copied the San Diego people and did a yard sale fundraiser today, and it has been the most amazing, wonderful experience.
That's
and
great. You know, that
Tony
was.
And I are on the, huh.
Go ahead.
I just said Tony and I are on this call. Our cohorts are covering for us, and we have to come back to yard sale when we leave here. But it is just the greatest thing. You know, we just followed the format the San Diego people did, and it was fairly easy. And we're just having so much. People are being so generous with us.
That's neat. I knew you guys were doing that today. I was thinking about you. As a matter of fact, it was on my little agenda today to talk about fundraisers, and I skipped it so that we could have some time for the facilitator issues. But, how about if we make that a top priority next week? Maybe, Marie, I hope you can be on the call, and you can tell us about that, because I think that could really help and inspire everyone who's trying to do something like that.
I feel like we have a blueprint for a really great way to do it, because we just followed what somebody else did, and it's just been magic for us.
Yeah, and real simple, too, it sounds like.
Yeah, we did it the simplest way possible, and it's been not that stressful, and I feel like we're making a lot of – I know I have lots and lots of money in my fanny pack right now.
That's great. And that blueprint, where is that? Is that written up someplace?
It's on the fundraiser page of the Africa Vulnerable Children Project pages, and down at the bottom
It
says resources for fundraising and tips on a yard sale. They tell you it's a how-to on the yard sale they do every year. And we've already decided to make it an annual event. People have been asking us, are y'all going to do this next year?
That's great. Yeah, well, I know they have a big time, too, down there. It seems like it's a kind of a formula for having a great big time and lots of fun and raising money for everybody.
Yeah, it's a formula for making it fun, is what I think.
For making it fun, yeah, that's great.
When people see you laughing and smiling and talking, then they get, it seems like to me, then they just seem like they want to get involved some way and help us.
Uh-huh. That's neat. That's terrific.
This is Linda. I bet that's going to be up on our website any second now, huh, Marie?
Yes,
we're
taking pictures.
That's great. Well, let's make that a commitment next week and to talk about the fundraising thing, because I think – I know it's kind of hard to get going with something like that, but boy, every time people talk about it, they talk about it like you're talking about it, Marie. That's just such a big, fun sangha kind of a thing to do. So maybe we can talk about that next week and support anybody who wants to do that.
Okay, great. Thanks.
All right, we're over time already, guys, so sorry about that. And for the folks who, there are some facilitation issues out there that we didn't get to cover, so maybe we can try again next week. If there's, for you guys, anything that we didn't get to talk about, if you want to email us in, if there's something you really need right now, email us in and we'll see if we can handle it in another way. And maybe we can just continue with those things next week.
Okay.
So thanks, everybody. So I think next week's call is on Friday, isn't it?
Friday, 8:30, yeah, 8:30 North Carolina time.
Eastern time, 5:30 West Coast time. So we'll see you then. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.